We have to be honest about where our trade relationship is falling short.
The U.S. Vice President in Japan emphasizes trade. It's Wednesday, April 19th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us too online for VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, elections loom in Jakarta. Rohingya children are missing. Australia changes its stance on skilled workers. Technology is changing in Cambodia. It all starts right now on VOA Asia. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence arrived in Japan Tuesday to discuss rising regional tensions over the North Korea nuclear threat and trade relations in the wake of the U.S. withdrawal from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Pence met with Prime Minister Shinzo Abe for lunch, where they focused on security issues before meeting with Deputy Prime Minister Taro Aso for economic discussions. And as he did in South Korea, the vice president reassured Japan of American resolve to rein in North Korea's nuclear and missile ambitions. Pence again stressed, quote, the era of strategic patience is over, while all options are on the table, including the possible use of military force.
We appreciate the challenging times in which the people of Japan live. With increasing provocations from across the Sea of Japan. And as the President himself would say, if he was here, let me be clear, to you, Mr. Prime Minister, and to all the people of Japan, we are with you 100%.
North Korea's repeated ballistic missile tests in the last year have all been fired in the direction of Japan. The two leaders underscored China's important role in dealing with its economically dependent ally in Pyongyang, and the need to persuade the leadership in Beijing to take on a bigger role. Tokyo is the second stop on the vice president's 10-day tour of Asia. In addition to regional security issues, Pence is in the region to reassure friends and allies that President Trump is committed to a robust bilateral trade deal with Asia after pulling out of the TPP that was to include the United States, Japan, and 10 other Pacific Rim countries, which together accounted for 40% of the world economy.
The United States of America is determined to reach out to our partners here in the Asian Pacific and around the world to at least begin to explore the possibility of expanded economic opportunities, including trade, on a bilateral basis.
Bilateral deals, Pence said, allow countries to foster balanced trade on equal footing more than multilateral deals that opponents say have disadvantaged U.S. industries and cost American jobs. Japan's reported $69 billion trade surplus with the United States last year has been a source of contention for the United States as the two sides seek a long-term goal of developing a bilateral free trade agreement. Before leaving South Korea Tuesday, the vice president addressed business leaders in Seoul, where he had praised the security alliance as unwavering, unshakable, and ironclad, but said the bilateral economic relationship is in need of repair.
Despite the strong economic ties between the United States and South Korea, we have to be honest about where our trade relationship is falling short.
Since the South Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement took effect in 2012, the U.S. trade deficit with South Korea has more than doubled. In 2016, the surplus measured at $23.2 billion, according to U.S. official data. The vice president reiterated concerns voiced by the American business community that South Korea has used non-tariff-related environmental and inspection regulations to undermine the FTA.
Our businesses continue to face too many barriers to entry, which tilts the playing field against American workers and American growth.
Pence said the United States will seek to renegotiate some terms of the trade agreement with South Korea to give American companies increased and equitable market access.
We'll pursue trade that is both free and fair, and that will be true in all of our trade relationships, including CORUS. We're reviewing all of our trade agreements across the world to ensure that they benefit our economy as much as they benefit our trading partners.
U.S. President Donald Trump campaigned on a platform of economic nationalism that he called America First. He promised to overhaul trade agreements that he says hurt U.S. jobs. Our thanks to VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Patton for bringing us this report. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Vice President Pence says all options considered for dealing with North Korea. Local Tibetans summoned after latest self-immolation. Crowd in Pakistan celebrates lynching, according to a mobile video. U.S. Marines arrive in Darwin for Australia and China exercises. China's Xi Jinping and high-stakes gamble on development zone. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Voters in the Indonesian capital Jakarta head to the polls later Wednesday to decide on a governor, whether to return incumbent Basuki Cahayapurnama, known as Ahok, or elect a former education minister, Anies Baswedan. Pre-election surveys show a tight race in this final round that could test the world's most populous Muslim country's modern secular tradition. Purnama's blasphemy trial is currently on hold during the campaign, but the legal battle has energized hardline Islamists behind his opponent. Purnama is accused of insulting the Quran last year after an edited video suggested he mocked a portion of the Muslim holy book. Peter McCauley, an Australian author, economist, and visiting fellow with the Indonesia Project at the Australian National University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the post of Jakarta governor has often been a stepping stone to the presidency.
Indonesia as a whole is a nation of 260 million people. It's a very widespread nation, so we should not focus too much on just the capital alone. But nevertheless, it is true that it is a touchstone, it is a guide to the direction of politics in Indonesia, and therefore it is an important election and certainly worth watching. There's no question about that. This election is an important election both for Indonesia and indeed for Southeast Asia.
A survey last week suggested the polls have tightened, the race is very close. The incumbent governor has also, strangely, been standing trial on blasphemy charges.
That's part of the whole political thrust, if you like. The groups who were opposed to the current governor, his full name is Basuki Cahayapurnama, but he's often known as Ahok. Ahok is a very unusual for Indonesia, a Christian Chinese. So he's a double minority, as it were. But he's had a reputation as a can-do person. He speaks bluntly, he acts bluntly, so he's an actor and gets things done. Well, his opponents, who have been really from the Islamic groups, seized upon a statement of his late last year, accused him of blasphemy, and that's really a strongly political, it's a political religious move. So that has been hanging over this whole election, the charge of blasphemy. There is a court case continuing to go on, and the judgment in the court case has been postponed, and I think wisely, until after the election. But that hangs there. That is part of the game, and it's a fairly tough, fairly vicious political game. There's no doubt about it.
A hardline Islamist group led by Islamic Defenders Front have vowed to stage protests and a revolution, quote-unquote, if Ahok, Mr. Purnama, wins.
To some extent, these sorts of threats, this rhetoric is these days just normal part of Jakarta politics, Indonesian politics. Indonesian politics these days are very competitive, very noisy, very competitive, and in some ways very healthy, because lots of people have access to the media and freedom of assembly is strong. So in some ways this is just what you might call political rhetoric. But nevertheless, behind that, these groups are certainly capable of mobilizing very large numbers of people, and there are deep tensions. And whatever the result of this election on Wednesday, whatever the result, there is going to be continuing tension both in Jakarta and across Indonesia.
Purnama inherited the post from now President Joko Widodo in 2014, and if he prevails, Purnama, the grandson of a tin miner from southern China, would become the first non-Muslim governor in Jakarta's history. Happening now in Asia, North Korea's deputy UN ambassador Kim In-rung accused the United States of saber-rattling in South Korea. He said Washington is pushing the Korean Peninsula toward the brink of war, and North Korea would hold the U.S. responsible for any military strikes. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Very happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. They have been driven from their homeland in Myanmar and into desperate conditions. Now, newly arrived Rohingya in Bangladesh are facing a new threat, the disappearance of their children. John Owens reports from Cox's Bazar, where fears are growing about their fate in a district known for its human trafficking networks.
These are some of the few remaining traces that Rashida has left of her firstborn. Her husband was killed as they fled Myanmar late last year, and her 10-year-old son Mohammed has gone missing since they arrived in Bangladesh.
My daughter is always crying. She says that she will never see her brother in the future.
Rashida is one of roughly 70,000 people to flee Myanmar since October, where the long-oppressed minority Muslim Rohingya community has been subject to a brutal crackdown by military forces. And in this makeshift home of the displaced and vulnerable, it seems that other children are going missing too. Among those raising the alarm are Action Against Hunger, which is aware of 16 suspected abductions since January. Because of a long history of persecution, an estimated 300,000 to 500,000 Rohingya now reside in Bangladesh. And many live here, in Kutupalong camp near the Myanmar border. But the NGO, which offers protection in the form of a child care centre, is particularly concerned about the vulnerability of newly arrived Rohingya.
They don't have any support. They have to make a living, so they have to be separated from their kids. So they have some kind of social mechanism or some kind of setup where they're leaving the children, assuming it's safe, and they're going to try and earn some living. And those are kind of separations, like when they're separated, that's also the highest risk.
So far, little is known about the true scale or nature of the problem. Lacking citizenship, many Rohingya fear approaching the authorities. But with human trafficking networks well established in the region, concern is widespread among parents and teachers.
We're very sad about losing these children. We're even hearing that they're taking the kidneys from some of the children.
Efforts are ramping up to spread awareness over the issue. Meanwhile, all Rashida can continue to do is search, hope, and remember the little boy she once held.
I expect that I'll get him back if Allah wishes.
Elsewhere in the camp, others are sharing the same prayer for their missing children. John Owens for VOA News, Kutupalong Camp, Bangladesh.
You may see video to this story on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Vice President Mike Pence arrived in Japan, where he met with Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Pence reaffirmed the United States' alliance with Tokyo against North Korea. Pence is also discussing trade with Japan. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, Australia is to scrap a major scheme for skilled foreign workers. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says new visa categories will ensure that jobs will go to Australians before they are offered to temporary migrants. A similar program in the United States to recruit high-tech skilled foreign workers has been criticized by President Trump. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The so-called 457 visa in Australia will be abolished and replaced with two new visa classes. The 457 program has allowed employers to bring in staff from overseas for up to 4 years if they couldn't find a suitably qualified Australian. The system was designed to plug skills shortages and included more than 650 eligible occupations, including cooks, cafe managers and marketing specialists. Most of the temporary visas have been granted to migrants from India, Britain and China, but there were concerns that some workers were underpaid and pricing Australians out of work. There were also concerns from labour organisations that some foreign workers were being exploited by unscrupulous bosses. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the 457 programme had lost its credibility, and he believes the new arrangements will put Australians first.
We are truly an immigration nation, but we must ensure that the foundation of that success is maintained, and the foundation is that our migration system is seen to work in the national interest. It's seen to deliver for Australians. It's seen to ensure that Australian jobs are filled by Australians wherever possible.
Critics have accused successive governments of preferring to import thousands of temporary foreign workers rather than invest in training young Australians. Recent figures have shown that youth unemployment in parts of Queensland state stands at 28%, more than double the national average. A similar foreign recruiting program in the United States, the H-1B visa program, has come under fire from President Trump, who says he'll not allow American workers to be displaced by foreigners holding H-1B visas. The American program has been allowing up to 85,000 skilled foreign workers to be hired by U.S. high-tech firms for up to 3 years, but the Department of Justice warned this month that U.S. companies shouldn't discriminate against American workers. The 457 scheme in Australia will be replaced by a new temporary visa designed to recruit the best and brightest, with more stringent English language tests and skills requirements. The number of 457 visas granted has dropped to about 45,000 in the past year, well below its peak of over 100,000 in previous years. Migration specialists say the system has become too bureaucratic and complex. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Developing at this hour in Asia, disappearing children among displaced Rohingya Muslims in Bangladesh are raising fears they've been abducted into human trafficking networks. About 70,000 Rohingya have fled Myanmar in recent months. Bangladeshi authorities and NGOs are trying to eliminate trafficking. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Sofat Sung is a technology reporter with the VOA Khmer Service, and after spending several months both in California's Silicon Valley and in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, he sat down with VOA Asia's Steve Miller to share what he discovered about emerging technology trends in Cambodia.
One of the main things that I captured well, which was there started to be investment into the startups in Cambodia. So that's new.
Aside from like first round VC funding or like actual investment to move out of that incubator period?
Well, I think actually early stage. Okay. So even that was missing. So compared to its neighbors, the Cambodian tech scene is still very infancy. And in fact, you know, my editor was saying, you know, good luck finding a story there because maybe there's no story. In fact, things were happening more towards the end of my trip. And that's I couldn't really control, but things were happening. So there are more startups. What was missing is local investors did not yet understand what the technology sector is like.
Do?
Yeah, we don't have a Silicon Valley culture. There's no sense of as in like if you invest in a startup, what is the return? There has not been any success stories that you see, let's say in the US, you know, like Facebook, Snapchat, all these IPOs, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't have that yet. And that's probably true even in other parts of Southeast Asia from what I heard, you know, from the traditional investors versus sort of the younger people who like now do tech. And then I think for older investors, traditional investors, they don't have a sense yet of what's the return. So there has been some smaller cases of investment, and that's very true. In March, we broke this news about a Silicon Valley investor called 500 Startups that invested in this BuzzFeed-like website called Khmer Lote. And we broke that news, and I think, you know, the local news and stuff were covering that as well after that. And it happened around this time of other types of interest that actually local investors started to be interested. So one of the interesting thing of that development was just that I think an outside investor validated the importance of the growing tech scene there. And I think, you know, local investors start to see that. So potentially that is a turning point. And then there is a local telecom company called Smart Asiata, which has this $5 million fund, which was also announced in March. So everything happened at the same time. So it wasn't that one led to another. I think they all just converge at that point. And I think we saw that as sort of spending there a few months, I saw that trend coming. And I'm glad personally that we picked that as a trend. And it's going to be interesting to see later in the year how all these startups are going to move forward and grow potentially outside of Cambodia even.
Sopat Sung reports on technology for VOA's Khmer service. We'll have more from his discussion with Steve Miller as they turn to China's influence in the region and impact on technology on tomorrow's program. We continue now with focusing on Parkinson's disease, which was first identified 200 years ago, and so far there's no cure for it. The degenerative neurological condition causes muscle stiffness, slowness of movement, and tremors. Most people may not know that they have Parkinson's for many years because the disease is gradual, causing nerve cell damage in the brain that affects the central nervous system. And because of that, the disease is usually diagnosed too late for effective treatment. So scientists are now focusing on research in an effort to stop the disease from progressing before the symptoms appear. VOA's Deborah Block has more during Parkinson's Awareness Month in the United States.
Pathologist Steve Gentleman is dissecting the brain of an elderly man who had been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, looking for different stages of the disease.
Parkinson's disease pathology, which often starts off as a motor problem, the longer you live, the more likely you are to get more cognitive problems, more decision-making, etc. So we have six areas of the brain that we know there'll be a fairly stereotypical spread of pathology over time.
Parkinson's affects nerve cells deep in the brain that produce a neurotransmitter called dopamine, which relays messages that plan and control body movement. Despite huge strides in diagnosing and understanding the degenerative condition, doctors struggle to treat the symptoms. If the disease can be caught before too many neurons have died, medication and physical therapy could help control its progression. But catching Parkinson's early is the problem.
It's unfortunate, you only see the symptoms when you've lost about 80% of them. So quite a lot of damage within the brain has happened by the time you're seeing the symptoms. But the symptoms of Parkinson's are not all just about motor control. There are the non-motor features, there's a high incidence of depression, there's declining cognitive function as well. So it is a very complex disease that affects quite a lot of different neuronal pathways.
As he works, Gentleman notices the lining of black cells on the midbrain is not continuous, the first sign of Parkinson's. Examining the brain further, he finds indications that the man had Parkinson's for 3 years. The brain samples will be placed on wax slides for closer examination through a microscope.
We don't have any drugs that stop the disease process. We are symptomatically treating. We're treating what we see. But if and when, and hopefully with the research that goes on, we'll be able to find a drug that will stop progression.
But to do that, scientists still need to find a way to identify Parkinson's patients before they start to show symptoms of the disease. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
And as the amazing research continues, you can find out more on our website at voanews.com. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our program is available many different ways, including iTunes and SoundCloud, and of course, on Facebook. It streams every day on VOA Asia. You can download us as a podcast as well. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon, our managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team includes Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.